How's it going, guys? Happy Friday. Welcome to another episode of the A10 Talk Podcast. I'm your host, as usual, Sam Basil. And joining me today is Daniel Frank. Daniel, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good, Sam. Good to be back here on the A10 Talk Podcast. Happy to be back, as always. And, you know, we're recording this literally minutes after that GW Maryland game finished. And, you know, even though it was a loss, I'm feeling good. I'm feeling good about that game. So, you know, can't complain.
Yeah, you know, I think we're all feeling good here at A10 Talk because, you know, after months of waiting, after, you know, five episodes of this podcast, we are finally able to talk some A10 hoops in action. Of course, you just mentioned that GW game. We'll get to that right in a sec. But, you know, there was a lot of great A10 conference, non-conference play all this week. There's plenty more to come this weekend. And I think right now, A10 fans should be excited. There is a lot of great basketball being played and a lot more great basketball to come. So first up, let's talk about, you know, one of the few A10 games that there was tonight, with George Washington versus Maryland. You know, a final score of 71-64. I believe George Washington was leading by 1 point in the first half. So Daniel, what did George Washington do to kind of have Maryland's number in this game?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I think they led by as many as five in the first half at one point. The start of the game was about as ugly a start to a game as I've seen. I think both teams started like 0-for-10 from three. It was some ungodly amount of turnovers. I mean, it was these full court length passes and they botched layups, and it was just ugly first 8 minutes of the ball game. And then, you know, GW finally got some stuff going. Joe Bamzil just got to the bucket. I mean, basically, he was like, I'm tired of this jump shot stuff. Let's just get to the rim and see what happens. And he was able to finish, and he had, I think, 16 first half points. I mean, he was getting into it with the Maryland student section. That was amazing to watch just on television. Like, you know, they were chanting, Joe, you suck. And he would be, you know, waving them on. And, you know, they were going back and forth the whole game. And I mean, that was just, I think, a confidence element that GW has been lacking for several years now, just to have a guy that's just like, hey, I'm not scared of any of this, like on the road, top 25 school. And he, you know, the light was not too big for him. I think really tonight begins and ends with the discussion of Joe Bamazil. And then, you know, a couple stats I didn't realize that they were talking about on the broadcast. It made sense. It's been about 6 years or so since GW last knocked off a ranked opponent. I'm assuming, if my math is correct, that's probably when they beat Virginia in 15-16 season. But they were saying on the broadcast, GW's not beat a ranked opponent on the road in 25 years, wow. Which I don't know if that's correct or not. I kind of want to double check that, but that was surprising.
Yeah, and I'm glad you bring up Joe Bamzil. And thank you for clearing up what the crowd was shouting, by the way. I thought they were kind of resorting to the classic, you know, ref, you suck, as crowds tend to do at every kind of sporting event, you know, because any call against your team is the wrong call. But
of course.
So thank you for clearing that up. And, you know, Joe Bamzil, you know, 20 points tonight, 8 rebounds, a transfer from Virginia Tech. Going into this season, were you excited about this transfer?
I mean, I'm on the record. If folks want to go back and listen to our previous podcast when we've talked about GW basketball, like, I was not the most high on this dude. I think he came in averaging like 6-odd points a game from Virginia Tech. Like, you know, yeah, it's nice to get a guy from, you know, a big Power Five school, but you never know what you're going to get with those transfers. And I kind of lumped him into the mess of, 10 incoming transfers or something that GW, some obscene number GW had coming in, if you count transfers, I guess, in freshmen. I really didn't know what to expect from this kid. He was not the number one kid on my radar. If you'd asked me, I would have probably said Brandon Adams, who also, for the record, had himself a very nice game tonight. He's a UConn transfer. And he also had the shot that was about halfway down from tying the game with about a minute to go. But no, Joe Bamazil just completely took over this game. I mean, I just can't say enough good things about him and how excited. I mean, guys were comparing him on Twitter to guys like Yuta Watanabe, and just his ability to just like take over a game. I mean, something, especially when James Bishop did not have a point for the first like 32 odd minutes, I think, of this game, which it makes it all the more remarkable that GW was able to be remotely competitive, let alone winning for half the game, and had a lead at the half. And, you know, when out of halftime, Maryland had a 6-0 run, and GW looked kind of shell-shocked. And there was one point where right after that third bucket of the half, GW inbound the ball, and I think Bishop and Lindo were passing back and forth, and they just passed the ball straight out of bounds with no one on them within 30 feet of them. And it kind of was one of those moments at the time that I was like, oh God, this is where the wheels fall off the bus. We're going to lose by 30, and it all, you know, yay, fun first half, but that was it. But I mean, I admit I was frankly surprised by how much poise GW showed in those moments. And I mean, even with about 5 minutes to go, it was like a 10-point game. It was about as large a lead as Maryland, I think, it had the whole night. And they went on a 12-1 run, got it to within three, and the ball was halfway in the cylinder, and the shot from Adams to tie the game with a minute left. I mean, I really have no complaints from this tonight. It was just really a good showing from GW.
Yeah, and, you know, kind of moving on to their opponents, Maryland, you know, for any A-10 fans, especially Rhodey fans, there was a familiar face on the Terrapins in Fats Russell. Obviously, you know, he played at Rhode Island for a couple of years, was probably one of the top guards in the A-10 while he was there. And, you know, 15 points, 6 rebounds. How would you evaluate his performance in Maryland tonight?
He was electric, especially on the defensive end. I mean, in the first half, I think he had 4 or 5 steals. He had several deflections. I think he straight up blocked a shot from James Bishop the first possession of the ball game. He was a little quieter on the offensive end. He had mostly kind of put back kind of, you know, scrappy buckets that you'd think of with Fats. But of course, when it came down to it, the final minute, GW, after the Brennan Adams three didn't go down, Maryland came down and Fats Russell hits a step back three to, it was the dagger of the game. I mean, Maryland ended up hitting one free throw after that, but that was really the ball game in that moment. And you kind of just had to know, of course, it was going to be Fats Russell. I think I tweeted out, like, Fats Russell, what else did you expect? Like, it could only have been Fats Russell to hit that kind of shot.
With the Big Ten, as good as the Big Ten is this year, you know, in my preseason, early preseason predictions for College Hoops Digest, I talked about, you know, maybe we might see two Big Ten teams in the Final Four this year. We'll probably see at least one. And I really do think the Wooden Award is going to come out of the Big Ten this year. Where do you see Fats kind of fitting in to the discussion of Big Ten hoops?
I mean, I think after tonight, especially just on the defensive end, I mean, he had a lot of minutes. I mean, I'll pull the box score real quick as I'm talking, but I'm pretty sure he started the game, and he really just had such a tremendous impact on the defensive end, which obviously to Atlantic 10 fans, that's no surprise. Here we go, 28 minutes for Fats Russell. But it felt like he was on the floor the whole game. He ended up with, here's the final stat line, 15 points, 3 fouls, 2 turnovers, a block shot, 2 steals, 1 assist, 6 rebounds, 4-10 shooting, 6-7 from the line. And I mean, that's something that's only going to improve for him as he settles into, you know, just stepping up a level of competition. Obviously, being at a Big Ten school, you're going to have different expectations. But I mean, much like Kellen Grady, if we're going to talk about him down at Kentucky, seems to be fitting in very well. I think that's one of the things that I think the A-10 doesn't get enough credit for, just how good the guard play is in this league. I know, I think it was Jamie and Christian on A-10 Media Day was talking about James Bishop, saying he's like one of the best guards in the Atlantic 10. And if you're one of the best guards in the A-10, you're one of the best guards in the country. And I know, at the time, the reaction on Twitter was kind of like, oh God, this guy's a little bit off his rocker. But I mean, yes, it sucks to see guys like Grady and Russell leaving the Atlantic 10, but to see them going up to these high level schools and immediately being in the starting lineup and leading teams and scoring in big moments, I mean, it speaks, I think, to the level of talent that is in this league.
Yeah. And, you know, I think people did kind of scoff at Jamie and Christian when he said that, but you know, I'm in the same camp as you. I really have a hard time disagreeing. And I think, you know, where a lot of the naysayers argue against Christian on that is, you know, you see guys like Kellen Grady and you see guys like Fats Russell by the time they are elite guards that can be elite on a national stage, they're either, you know, graduated or transferred. So maybe it's not necessarily that the A-10 doesn't have elite guard play. It's just that they, as a conference, just don't have what it takes to maybe retain some of the top guys as much as they should. And, you know, whether or not that's a bad thing, I mean, obviously, if you're looking for, you know, at-large bids, tournament appearances, that's not good. I mean, you want to keep your best players. But, I mean, I think if you're just focused on, you know, building a reputation for your school, I don't think that's a terrible title to have. And so moving on from there, you know, this close loss to Maryland tonight, let's talk about their win against St. Francis on Tuesday, 75-72 at home. They are one of, you know, 13 out of the 14 A-10 schools to get a win on Tuesday night. Shout out LaSalle for breaking Chris Pyle's, you know, can't lose A-10 parlay. But what did you like about the Colonials in this first game?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. It's a similar type of story, I think, as we saw in the first half of the game tonight. I will, full disclosure, preface this. The only game of opening night that I saw was the George Mason game, because I was there at that game, just for full disclosure. But my father was at the GW game. He and I discussed it at length. I looked at the stats and all that. But again, the first thing that jumped off the page, James Bishop had 8 points the whole game, which can be obviously a bad thing because you want the returning leading scorer in the conference to obviously be scoring for you. But I think it speaks to a level of depth that GW finally has because, look, James Bishop, I think, understands that he's going to be the number one guy at the top of the scout for every team that GW faces this year. I think maybe he was a little bit of a secret that got out last year towards the end of the season, but everyone, I think, knows he's the top of the scouting report this year. But that frees up guys like Joe Bamzel, Brennan Adams, and Ricky Lindo Jr. to really just do the kind of stuff they did both tonight and obviously Tuesday night. I mean, Brennan Adams had a career-high 22 points. Bamzel had a quiet 20, if you want to call it that, given how much attention he got tonight. And then you had, you know, a solid 17 points and 9 boards from Ricky Lindo Jr. And no, it was not the prettiest game by any stretch. They shot just 38% from the field. But they found a way to win. And I think that's something that you couldn't say about GW teams the last 5-odd years since Lonergan left. I mean, so many of these games, I mean, the American game a year or two ago comes to mind when they lost at the buzzer. Like, these types of games against mid-level, mid-major teams that, yeah, they sneak up on you a little bit, but at the end of the day, you got to find a way to win those games. And that's what GW did. I think that's the most important outcome of that game for sure, is they found the way to win. And they got some bench scoring too. I mean, Hunter Dean had a nice night as well. It just, the more depth and the more contribution that GW gets, the better it's going to be.
And so do you think with this new roster, you know, Jamie and Christian is kind of, do you think this season is going to, you know, be kind of an upturn on the reputation of Jamie and Christian? I mean, do you think these performances and these new transfers that have come in and have kind of, you know, even in a loss to Maryland, produced very solid results, kind of, you know, help show that, you know, Christian's vision for George Washington is finally going to get put into place?
You know, I certainly hope so. I mean, again, like, I'm on the record on this podcast already saying, like, look, if Christian doesn't get it together for GW this year, maybe it's time for him to move on. I will walk that back right now tonight after this GW loss to Maryland, playing as well as they did. Look, I want to be made into a Jamie Christian believer. My heart wants nothing more, as I have said before, to see this GW team be competitive, do well. It obviously is fantastic for the league when GW does well. Historically, when GW has been at the top of the Atlantic 10, the Atlantic 10 Conference as a whole has done well. And I think that is absolutely true now. I would love to see this GW team surprise a lot of people. No, I'm not, even despite how well they did tonight, I'm not going to go out and say, oh, they're a top four team in the conference. No, not by any stretch. But, you know, it's good to see some steps. That's really what I wanted to see this year, was just some steps in the right direction. And that's what we're seeing tonight. And it's what we're starting to see. And look, as long as they keep being competitive and just showing that promise, I mean, the worst thing they could do now is go out and just lay two eggs. They play two games in California in the coming week. They're at UC San Diego Saturday and Cal State Fullerton, I think, on Tuesday night. And the worst thing they could do now is follow up this great performance with two really ugly losses. I mean, you just want them to continue to follow the right track and improve.
Of course. And, you know, we are only two games in, so it's really hard to say, you know, whether or not this George Washington team is as good as they've shown themselves to be so far. But of course, here at A10 Talk, you know, we're always hopeful. And their next game, like you mentioned, is this Saturday against UC San Diego at 10 p.m. And so kind of moving on from the Colonials, let's talk about the game that you were at Tuesday night with George Mason and their win over Stony Brook. I think a lot of people maybe underwriting this win. Of course, you know, because not a lot of people have been following Mason hoops maybe in the offseason, or maybe people are kind of underestimating how good this Stony Brook Seawolves team could be. But I think this was probably one of the most solid wins in the A-10 on Tuesday night. Of course, there was a scoreline of 74-52. Josh Oduro scored 16 points. You had four of Mason's starters in double digits. You know, was this a great first showing for Kim English?
Honestly, I don't think it could have gone a whole lot better. I mean, I wrote a little bit about this game for Giant Killer beforehand. And I mean, I was vocal about my concerns that George Mason was going to lose this game. Just historically, Mason has had very poor showings under Dave Paulson, admittedly, but on opening nights in the past. I mean, they lost to Penn on opening night my freshman year. My sophomore year, it took overtime to beat Navy. Last year, they had the near disaster against Division II Queens. I mean, it's not been pretty for Mason on opening nights in particular. You know, Stony Brook came in ranked 185 in KenPom, which was a solid 25-odd spots ahead of Mason. They were 212 heading into the ball game. They were the America East Conference favorite. And they had preseason player of the year in the America East Conference, Elijah Olani, I think is how you say his name, who's a Miami transfer. I mean, this was a solid team, and they showed in the first half. I mean, they kind of mucked things up defensively, that made life a little bit difficult for Mason. It wasn't the prettiest first half in the world, but Mason had enough of a lead. And, you know, the second half, they just really turned it on. They found another gear. It's something that, I mean, I was sitting there watching this as they pulled away. It was like watching a top, like, just for the sake of example, a top 25 team on a random Tuesday night in December when, you know, yeah, there's a plucky upstart team that's challenging them in the first half. But in the second half, they just flex their muscles and the better team wins out in that type of game. And that was what it felt like watching Mason. Not that I'm calling them a top 25 team for clarification, but it was that type of win where, like I said in the Giant writer group chat at the time, I was like, I feel genuinely like Mason is a better team on the floor tonight. And I don't know if I felt that way in my 4 years at George Mason in any game they played. I mean, at no point in the second half was I concerned they were going to lose, collapse, anything like that they've done before. I mean, it was nice to see Mason just take it to a mid-major team, you know, a lower-level major. Granted, not to take anything away from Stony Brook, and again, I really think they could be an NCAA tournament team, but the types of teams that Mason – type games like this Mason in the past have not done well with, and they've – barely squeaked it out. This was not the case Tuesday night.
Of course. And, you know, it looked like the A-10 was kind of the better team on the floor in almost all of their games. And so, you know, what were some of the other performances around the conference that really stuck out to you? I mean, for me, I might have to go the obvious and go Taylor Funk on St. Joe's. I mean, 22 points against Maryland Eastern Shore, which, you know, I think we've been talking about in the A-10 talk circle, seemed to be a bit better of a team than everyone is kind of making them out to be. You know, they were kind of challenging. They were challenging St. Joe's in the beginning. They were, you know, holding their own in the first half against Temple a couple nights ago. But, I mean, of course, it just came down to Taylor Funk at the buzzer. So, I mean, were there any other, you know, kind of big wins around the A-10 that kind of piqued your interest?
Yeah, you know, I think you have to start with St. Bonaventure's win over Siena. That was a game kind of similar to Mason's in the track of it. It was a bit closer than it really should have been in the first half. I think Siena had a lead at one point. But slowly but surely, in the second half, they pulled away. Osuna didn't have the best offensive night. He ended up with 9 points. But the dude had 7 blocks. I mean, that's obscene. And then you had 17 points each from Kyle Lofton and Jaron Holmes, and then a nice 11 points from Dominic Welch. I mean, those are the types of numbers that Bon is going to need night in, night out from those guys. I mean, especially if a guy like Osuna'i is having a slower night offensively, you know, Bon has got the guys to pick up the slack in that regard. I mean, to have two guys dropping 17 points is a luxury that I think any team in this conference would love to take. So I think you certainly have to start there. The surprise of the night kind of was the VCU game, I think, for a lot of people. They led by as many as 17 points in the first half, and they gave up an 11-0 run towards the end of the first half. They still led by 8 at the break, but they actually got outscored 31-26 in the second half. It took a Hassan Ward go-ahead bucket with 26 seconds left to secure the win. VCU shot just 2 of 14 from 3 and got out-rebounded 38-31. I'm not sure how many teams have come into the Siegel Center and out-rebounded VCU and still walked away with a loss. I mean, that is not an easy thing to do. So I think that raised some alarm bells. It's definitely not panic time yet for VCU by any stretch that they want. You know, they're fine for the moment. I think on a similar strain, Dayton's game against UIC was a little bit of a, if you want to go, a struggle win type of game. I mean, at one point, I think in the second half, I tweeted out, is Dayton aware they're down 3 to UIC? I mean, I think of all, that, yeah. Of all the teams in the conference that we were playing, that was really the one that you couldn't afford to lose to. But, you know, they found a way to win. They won by 10 and all's fine. And, you know, we move on. And, you know, we would have had, were it not for LaSalle giving up a game-tying 3 in the final second of regulation of Sacred Heart, would have had a complete sweep. But talk to me a little bit about Sam. I know you've been wanting to talk about Fordham, and I don't want to keep you. So let's talk a little bit about Fordham. I know they had a nice 77-67 victory over Columbia. Tell me a little bit about your Fordham Rams.
Yeah, so, I mean, aside from the win, I think if anyone who's watching this game or who's maybe at this game on Tuesday night, I think the biggest takeaway from this game was just how quick the culture has changed around Fordham men's basketball. You know, in my 4 years at Fordham, there were a couple, you know, games where people would show out. You know, one that sticks out to mind is, you know, in I believe this was in early 2017 during conference play when Scoochie Smith was still on the Flyers, and Dayton was a very good program at that time. They still are, but that was probably one of their more solid years in the past 5 years. You know, provided a pretty packed gym. There were a couple, you know, conference play games, you know, here and there where, you know, the students would kind of fill out, but I've never seen anything like that. What I saw on Tuesday night, at the Rose Hill gym. I mean, people were flocking in. They did a doubleheader. The women's played Quinnipiac first and won a great game in overtime. It was incredibly exciting. You know, Asia Dingle had an amazing performance. You know, I believe she had 30 points. But yeah, you know, I think with Kyle Neptune, you could really see the change that he's brought to Fordham on the floor in this win against Columbia. Offensively, you know, like I've been saying for a long time, he's really adopted that Jay Wright kind of 4-out mentality. He consistently had 4 guys on the wing, and you know, probably the top performance of the night was no doubt Darius Quisenberry. I mean, he had, I believe, 20 points. 25 points off of 8 for 18 shooting from the field. 6 for 12 beyond the arc. And these guys were just fighting for the ball. I mean, every opportunity they had, every missed shot, there were at least two guys, you know, under the basket. They weren't just, you know, kind of, you know, bricking a shot and then reluctantly heading back on defense. These guys really fought for every single basket, and it showed. In terms of criticism, I do think maybe that Columbia kind of had their number in the second half defensively. It seemed like they were getting a bit tired, and you know, Columbia was getting a little bit too comfortable in the back door. You know, Fordham was kind of providing many open lanes, but according to Coach Neptune, I think he said that was a bit more of, it was less of Fordham kind of lapsing on defense and more of Columbia kind of just adjusting. You know, he cited Columbia as like a really tough shooting team. And, you know, I don't want to knock Coach Neptune after his season opener, but, you know, a school that was pulled to finish last in the Ivy League, I think maybe that, you know, it's okay to say that Fordham got a little tired. But, yeah, I think this was just a great win to build off of. And I'm excited to see what they do against Manhattan on Friday in the Battle of the Bronx.
Absolutely. I mean, I think – I know we said time and time again, but Fordham being good for in the Atlantic 10 would be so huge for the conference. I mean, the videos and the pictures that were coming out of the – like the Midnight Madness that y'all had over there with the DJ and the crowd. I mean, I have not seen that type of electricity in Rose Hill Gym for a men's game. I don't, other than like the Dayton game you're describing, like just it's such a good thing to see for the conference to have that type of support. And also, I love what you were talking about with the women's team too. I hope the crowd was there for both games, because shout out Fordham women's basketball as well while we're on the subject. I mean, they've got a special group of girls over there. They've got a really tough schedule. And as long as we're talking about women's basketball, I got to shout out Vanessa Blair Lewis at George Mason, getting her first win at the helm at Mason, 69-67 at FIU, snapping a 16-game losing streak for George Mason. I want to shout out the A-10 ladies just as a whole right now. Just real quick, Dayton women had a really nice opening win against Alabama A&M. Davidson hung in with a very good Virginia Tech team on opening day. Fordham, as you mentioned, had a nice win over a very solid Quinnipiac team. And Rhode Island absolutely dismantled Dartmouth. Those are all teams. And then UMass also had a nice win. Those are all teams that folks should have on their radar. Just if that could be my 30-second promo for women's basketball.
No, I totally agree. I mean, you know, as much as people kind of have clowned Fordham men's basketball over the past couple of years, I mean, the women's program under Coach Gately has been one of the best in the conference and maybe even one of the best in the Northeast. I mean, she's consistently produced top talent. And I think it's something that, you know, Fordham fans should always try and go to. You know, the move to have an opening night doubleheader, in my opinion, was so smart. It just creates, you know, this kind of feeling of togetherness. I know that they're competing in obviously two separate competitions, but I think when you have a school where, you know, the buzz is focused on basketball, those programs should be working together. And I think that's something that Coach Gately and Coach Neptune are aware of. He talked about the women's team in his press conference. And I just think it's so important that these teams both kind of support each other on their journeys. So yeah, definitely. But, you know, moving forward, I just think no matter what Fordham men's final record is at the end of the year, I think there's a lot to be excited about on this team. I'm just going to pull it up real quick, but Fordham just announced today that they've got a signing of a new recruit from New Jersey. And I think this is, you know, already something that's kind of showing that Kyle Neptune is reaching into his connections. He's reaching into his, you know, New York background to bring in some top recruits. So we've got this new guy, Will Richardson, from Bergen Catholic, probably one of the top, you know, Catholic schools, Catholic basketball programs in the immediate New York metro area. And, you know, he sounds like a pretty solid guy. He averaged 18.8 points per game, 4 rebounds and 2.3 assists during a very short high school basketball season. If you thought your favorite college team's basketball season was short last year, I mean, this guy was playing in a season that where his team finished with a record of 7-6. So that's pretty crazy. But luckily, you know, Fordham is able to, you know, pick guys like this up on their radar and kind of, you know, already start to build that culture. And I think it's going to, you know, just continue to create this extended buzz and excitement around this program that I don't think anyone's seen in almost 20 years.
No, I couldn't agree more. And just, it's going to help the league top down. I mean, especially other teams too. Like, I know UMass had a pretty solid win over a pretty good UMBC team as well. I mean, the more teams like that we can get just to be competitive and just have some good wins. I mean, Davidson had a very solid win over an underrated Delaware team, and they beat them by 20 odd points. You know, Rhode Island had, you know, admittedly a little bit of a tough night against Boston University. But again, BU's not a terrible team. I really think that they could be one of the top teams in the Patriot this year. Just, you know, these are all, just scrolling through the list, these are all fairly decent, you know, wins for the Atlantic 10 on opening night. I mean, St. Louis, you know, yeah, it was Central Arkansas, but hey, you never really scoff at a 35-point win. And then they followed it up with poor Harris Stowe with a 70-point win on a Wednesday night. It's 74 points at halftime, which, shout out to St. Louis, that was a school record for points and a half. I mean, that's crazy. But I mean, again, like, you know, I don't remember a better opening week for the A-10 in recent memory, just as a whole, all the way 1 through 14 in the conference, with the exception of LaSalle. But again, Sacred Heart is not, you know, a horrible program. It's, yes, that's a game you'd like to win, especially at home. But I think if you had told us, hey, opening night, you're going to get 13 of 14 games, we all would have raised our hands and said, absolutely, sign me up.
No, I couldn't agree more. You know, at a time where, you know, people are talking about, you know, is the A-10 only a two-bid conference? Could the A-10 be a one-bid conference? I mean, we were seeing discussions like that, I think, you know, midway through the first couple of games, people, because I think a lot of those teams were down and had to come back and win. It was quite the roller coaster of emotions for A-10 fans on Tuesday night. But I think going into, you know, this weekend, I think there's a lot to be excited about. And, you know, with that being said, what is your top game for this weekend? Maybe outside of Mason or GW Hoops.
Yeah, you know, that's a good question. I mean, I'm just scrolling through. I think I'm going to have to go with that Davidson game at San Francisco. I know that San Francisco is a team that knocked off UVA on a neutral floor a year ago. I'm not sure what quad win that would fall, or quad opponent that falls into. It's probably far too early for any of that math to matter anyway. But nevertheless, I think that's an opportunity for a solid road victory for, you know, a Davidson team that is, I think a lot of people would consider to be a dark horse in this league. And I really think that that has the potential to really be one of the more entertaining games of the weekend, for sure. I also want to say, I think St. Joe's Mount St. Mary's could also be, you know, a really good game. I believe Mount St. Mary's was the tournament team a year ago, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep. They won. They're the reigning NEC champs.
There you go. So another really good team right there. What about you?
I'm also going to have to go with a game where someone in the A-10 is playing an NEC opponent. Because I think this school is a great program, but also because I just think that, you know, the NEC in terms of low mid majors is a conference that's really on the rise. So if you're looking for a super fun, super exciting conference, I think NEC, I mean, outside of the A-10, of course, NEC play is just it's just an excellent conference to kind of sink your teeth into. And so with that, I'm going to go Rhode Island versus Bryant on Friday at 6. I don't really think people consider Rhode Island to be much of a basketball state, considering there are only 4 D1 programs. There are only 4 D1 schools in the entire state. you know, it's pretty small. You could probably drive across the whole state in about an hour. But I think what that does, it produces kind of a super intimate basketball environment where these schools, you know, all different conferences, you know, you got Bryant, Rhodey, Prov, and Brown. When these guys play each other in any combination, it can get very heated. I know Rhodey is probably one of the craziest fan sections in the A-10, maybe in the entire Northeast. But I just think this is going to be a very exciting game. I mean, Coach Jerry Grasso of Bryant really knows his stuff. I mean, he's always brought in some really top recruits. I know he was kind of in the running possibly for the Fordham job. You know, his name was being floated around. Actually was a former Fordham assistant coach. But, yeah, I think this is going to be a really great game. And if Rhode Island can pull off this win, I think they'll have a lot looking good on their resume heading into conference play. So that's going to be my pick. And with that, I think we're going to, you know, finish off this relatively short, but hopefully a bit more frequent episode of the A-10 Talk podcast. I'm your host, Sam Basil, alongside Daniel Frank, and we'll see you next time.